Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Guys, do you know anything about Kundalini? Have you been playing around with Kundalini and don't know what you're doing? That's a no-no. So listen to our show because we have Mary Schulten with us, and she's going to be talking about her latest book, Working with Kundalini, An Experiential Guide to the Process of Awakening. This is going to be riveting, so, you know, stay with us, take some notes, because a lot of information is going to be shared. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But you know, I always ask the question, are you truly ready to? And for my first-time listeners, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners. Intuitive since birth, I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, excuse me, allowing you to live your life to the absolute fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com, and I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. Kundalini awakenings have profound physical, emotional, and mental effects, making it difficult to cope with everyday life. Yet these powerful awakenings can also allow you to release past trauma and see the illusions of the false self and awaken your spiritual heart, enabling you to recognize the divine self. Mary Mueller Schulten is an acupuncturist, herbalist, cranial sacral therapist, zero balancer, and spiritual healer. She is the author of The Spiritual Awakening Guide, Managing Psychic Abilities, and The Body Diva. She has helped hundreds of people worldwide through her programs and consultations, and she lives near the Chicago, Illinois area, and you can check her out at her website, and that's maryschulten.com, maryschulten.com. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I am so delighted to have you. I absolutely love the book, Working with Kundalini, An Experiential Guide to the Process of Awakening. You have such a diverse background, you know, both in the mundane and spiritually. Why Kundalini and why at this time?
You know, I started experiencing symptoms of what you might call spiritual awakening when I was in my late teens. Basically, I started to have a bunch of really strange dreams, and I've always been a really sensitive, you know, deeply feeling person, but things started to really shift at about the age of 17, 18, 19. When I was 23, I started to experience really severe symptoms of what I now know is a Kundalini awakening. And so since that time, it's been, you know, 16 years since that time, I really have the sort of mind that really wants to understand what's going on with myself. And so I researched and sat with things and worked with more and more clients that were going through Kundalini awakenings to really figure out what is Kundalini, what is its process, how and why is it affecting me like it does, how and why does it affect other people like it is. And over time, I've reached that point where I can describe things, you know, somewhat simply and in a way that isn't creating more, hopefully more illusion or fear out there about the term. so other people can really start to understand on an in-depth level what Kundalini is, what a Kundalini awakening is, resources for Kundalini in the modern world, all of that sort of stuff. So my writing is very much an extension of my own path, my own research.
Okay. And it's very well researched, folks, and a lot of information in this wonderful little book. Now, tell us exactly what is Kundalini, in case there's someone in the audience that is not aware.
Yeah, so Kundalini is consciousness, but that can be a little bit of a sort of nebulous term. So there are different ways of looking at it that all sort of circle around the same idea. So it can be talked about like spiritual power, creation energy, evolutionary energy. Those are just some of the terms that all point to the same sort of concept, which is that a Kundalini awakening results in dramatic shifts in consciousness and becoming more consciously aware.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in your book you talk about there are three phases of Kundalini awakening. Could you share those with us?
Sure. Most people are familiar with the first phase of Kundalini awakening because it's where most people are. And this is the phase that's really dramatic. It's called the purification phase. And what this is that it feels like a volcano or a freight train of energy moving through you. It often does feel quite fiery with a lot of kind of bursts of energy, kind of large surges of energy up the midline. The next phase is what I call sort of a watery flow phase. The first phase is really focused on healing trauma and healing kind of stuff that is in the way. The second phase is very much about healing conditioning and facing more with devotional states, or really kind of going into communion or, you know, spiritual states that allow for us to really feel on an embodied level stuff that is outside of ourselves. And the third phase.
Okay. Wait a minute. Before we go to the third, I got a question about the second.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
In the book, you talk about in the second stage, shadow work. So explain to us what is shadow work and how Kundalini can help us release it, notice it, whatever it is that we need to do with our shadow.
Yeah. So shadow work is, if we're talking about the shadow, we're talking about the unrecognized aspects of self. And so these are typically aspects of ourselves that we deny or repress for good reason. And what we do when we deny or repress them is that we project them onto other people in the world. And so shadow work is really looking to the outer world and the people in it to see what is going on within ourselves. And by doing this, we really can reclaim our shadow. We can reclaim the power in that. And most of all, we could see these really big blockages within ourselves that we aren't conscious of yet. And so that very much has to do with the second phase, when we start to recognize, oh, what is inner is outer. And not only that, we have this sort of conscious awareness to be able to process of, oh, I really don't like that person because they remind me of my mother, or they remind me of, you know, the self-righteous aspects of myself, or the aspects of myself that are bitter, or, you know, that my 5-year-old self that still isn't healed. And so shadow work is a tremendous way of looking at what is unhealed within us by looking towards the outer world and seeing what's going on in our lives. And kind of taking that back internally and considering that as aspects of ourselves that are out of balance.
Okay. Okay, sorry I interrupted you, but I had that question. So the third stage.
No, it's perfect. I realize one of the difficult points about, you know, writing a book like this is that it is such, you know, it's, we're talking about consciousness here, and so it is, you know, such an in-depth area in such a way that just has so much, you know, incredible information to it. So we could talk about this for, like, days or years. So
yeah,
it's hard to bring it down to sound bites, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, based on your book, we could have, I don't know, maybe about 10 shows at 2 hours each and still not get through everything. And folks, this is how in-depth this information is in this book, Working with Kundalini. So if you are at all interested, and guys, I read a lot of books on a lot of subjects, and with this book, I've gotten so much information that helped me personally. It's actually helped me in my business, and you will be able to take a different look at yourself. At least that's what it was for me. So, again, I appreciate what you have shared, Mary. So the third stage is what?
It's the opening of the spiritual heart, and so it's a recognition that we cannot just live our lives for ourselves. You know, people talk about this in different ways, but, you know, like the descending of grace. But really it's the giving over of self to recognize that, you know, we can't live our lives just for ourselves, but also that who we are profoundly affects the people around us. It profoundly, you know, it has a ripple effect into the world. So we no longer are doing our work for ourselves. We're doing our work to be that ripple effect in the world.
Okay. Okay, and I misspoke earlier when I said there was three. There's actually four stages, and the final stage, which I found quite interesting, is what?
Oh, in the book, I do separate it out into three phases, and so the third phase really does end with enlightenment, and, you know, and that is a feeling of clear light flowing through the body. And just identification of ourselves on multiple levels. So what that means is that we can feel oneness, we can feel emptiness, we could feel bliss, we could feel all of these sort of transcendental states, but it's also a coming back down to earth and recognizing that we have human bodies for a reason. We have, you know, things to do in our human bodies. And sort of a re-anchoring into the world. So to put it simply, it's kind of, you know, the chop wood, carry water, and then after, you know, after your spiritual journey, you go back to chopping wood and carrying water.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, I don't know, hopefully I read this in your book and I'm not confusing books, but the final stage was more like the death of the ego.
Yeah.
How the fear of death, you know, just disintegrates or dissolves.
Yeah, you know, that happens towards the end of the second stage because
okay.
In order to offer the self, you know, in order to go into the third phase, there really needs to be this sort of pivot point where we are no longer living our lives just for ourselves, where we're offering ourselves in devotion. And the concept of ego death is really misconstrued. Ego death, we go through many ego deaths. You know, we very much experience our reality based on our past trauma, based on what we believe to be true about ourselves and the nature of the world. And so spiritual awakening overall is this continual deconstruction and like sort of reintegration of the ego. But it does eventually lead to this moving beyond fear of the physical form dying, basically, because you realize you're much more than your physical form.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, folks, we're speaking with Mary Schutten. She is the author of Working with Kundalini, an experiential guide to the process of awakening. You can check her out at her website, and that's maryschutten.com, maryschutten.com. Mary, you write extensively in your book about the chakra system and Kundalini. Could you talk to us about that?
Yeah, so how Kundalini awakens. Kundalini is a latent energy that's held. Our sacrums are sort of low back is sort of like a cup, and it holds this Kundalini energy. And what happens when it awakens is that it goes through the midline up through to the top of the head and kind of goes above the head. But our midlines are so essential because they have our chakra system in it. Mm-hmm. And so the rising of this energy and rising of consciousness really goes through the first chakra, which is our very animalistic, you know, deeply traumatized self and moves through the chakra system so that we can heal what's held within the chakra system, so we can get those chakras being really functional, so we can rewire our nervous system so this increased flow can flow through it. And the effect is this tremendous healing involving and this tremendous flow going through the midline that deeply heals the chakras, which are kind of these storage houses for a lot of our past traumas, past beliefs, stuff like that. And so it's this tremendous healing that happens of the chakra system, as well as them learning how to function better now that they don't have all of this stuff sort of clogging them up.
Okay. Well, you talk in your book about each chakra is considered to be like an elevator of consciousness, and also is considered to be an opening, I guess, or an introduction to the different gateways. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so each chakra, I talk in the book about our spiritual nervous system, and this includes the chakra system as well as some of the channels, like the channel that goes up the midline, these energy channels, the energy channels that wrap around it that look like essentially DNA spirals or the caduceus. And in terms of the chakra system, each chakra that becomes sort of enlivened or has kundalini energy rising through it, it not only releases kind of past trauma and stuff that's sort of clogging it up, but it also sort of wakes it up. And so the spiritual nervous system and our chakras extend through all of our energy bodies, and they're how we interface with information on a spiritual, energetic, and then physical level. We're constantly, they're kind of like little wheels or doors that's letting information in, letting information out. And most of our chakras are very much offline because of trauma and just stuff that's sort of held there. And so, they can become more functional through kundalini rising through them. But also, if we're talking about the chakra system, I do talk about that elevator. You know, if we're going from root consciousness, we're very much in a state where we don't really notice much more than our immediate concerns and our needs of other people. Mm-hmm. And so when we work through the chakra system going up, we start to expand our consciousness, so we start to notice more and more than just kind of what our needs and wants are of people. So to put it more simply, I will say that if you consider each chakra going up to be a sort of elevator of consciousness, we're going to, when we move through a chakra, into, like from the first chakra to the second or the second to the third, we're going to have a drastically different perspective of the world than the previous chakra. And so these perspective shifts are what happen on the spiritual path, and especially happen for people undergoing kundalini awakenings, where they see things much differently based on what chakra their sort of perspective is locked in or resting in.
Okay. Now, Mary, is there a typical kundalini awakening? Because, you know, some people might go through it like easy breezy, and other people like, you know, oh my goodness, what's going on? But is there a typical way, or?
There is. I mean, there are definitely some things to look for. What I will say about kundalini is that a lot of times we get spiritual terms sort of into our lexicon, and people don't have the education, so they think that any spiritual experience is a kundalini awakening, or they might want it for varying reasons. But there are different experiences of kundalini that can go from having a very momentary experience to it being a permanent awakening. So there is a wide continuum there of how you can experience kundalini. But I will say that what makes it difficult for some people and less difficult for others has a lot to do with prior preparation. So if one person is very much stuck in our physical reality. They have no concept of even their emotions, let alone anything spiritual happening outside of, you know, perhaps a Christianized paradigm, and even then, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That awakening for them, and they haven't done any prior healing work on themselves, that person experiencing a Kundalini awakening is going to be much different than somebody who's been in psychotherapy for 40 years, who has done a bunch of mind-body-spirit work before, who has the framework, who has done yoga for a long time to sort of prime and prepare their systems for it. And so it can kind of be anywhere in between. But the people who tend to really suffer are the people who don't have a framework for it and who are sort of battling against it because they have either a lot of trauma that is coming up or overwhelming experiences that are coming up, or they're battling against it because to have a spiritual experience in the modern world where we very much deny and are separate from the spiritual is a lot to reconcile for people.
Okay. So then what are some of the symptoms of the spiritual awakening that we could be aware of?
Yeah, so in my first book, The Spiritual Awakening Guide, I talk about how there are a lot of different spiritual awakenings that we can have, many paths up the mountain, so to speak. Kundalinis specifically are the rising of that energy from the first chakra up the head. And so that experience of a large amount of energy going through the midline upward, experiencing that volcanic fire or that great train of energy, shaking, spontaneous postures, ecstatic dancing, held or static or devotional postures. And what happens is a tremendous amount of processing. So what that means is that Kundalini is consciousness, and so when it rises, anything that is not consciousness, anything that is not enlightened, conscious, will rise, but basically our held emotions, our past traumas. And so this process experience, what people have, all of past trauma coming up, and it might not even be their own. It might be ancestral trauma or past life stuff coming up, and you know, all of these emotions are surging forward, and it can be quite emotional for people or difficult for people. However, the one thing to look for with Kundalini awakenings is not necessarily the symptoms, but are changes in way of being and perspective over time, because there are a lot of things that can mimic Kundalini awakenings, particularly nervous system disorders, but they won't result in the large shifts in consciousness over time that Kundalini does.
Okay, so let's say you have a nervous system disorder and you've gone to, you know, neurologist and any doctor you can think of that you think will help for you, whether it's allopathic or holistic, and nobody can find anything. They're like, you know, nope, you know, they want to send you to therapy because they think that you're nuts, right? With that, is it possible that that could be just the Kundalini awakening and you just don't know how to manage the energy?
It certainly can be. Mm-hmm. However, I am cautious because, you know, I've been doing spiritual work for a long time, and we, you know, there is a tendency to want to sort of mythologize issues that we're having or to kind of put them on spiritual constructs. And so one of the things I'm very careful about in the book is that I talk about that no matter if you are experiencing a Kundalini awakening or not, is to really look at the symptoms that you're experiencing and to heal those, because Kundalini really isn't the issue. It's what it's bringing up in you. And so I have a lot of experience as a body worker, and I talk about in the back of the book all of the modalities that are really wonderful for healing Kundalini or healing trauma and that sort of stuff. And so if anybody has nervous system dysregulation, whether it's from Kundalini awakening or some other form of spiritual awakening or from, you know, a traumatic brain injury or whatever is going on with them, is that things like craniosacral therapy, which basically is light touch work that is targeted at the nervous system, that is really incredibly effective at targeting the nervous system and healing in a way that isn't forceful, that can allow for the body to rest sort of no matter what you're going through.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that. Now, what about, you know, way back when I was in a, God, this is like 30 years ago, I was in a metaphysical bookstore in Newark, California. I can't remember the name of it now, with my mom. And I picked up this book on Kundalini, and immediately the woman came from behind the counter and she shot over to me and she says, "Do you know anything about Kundalini?" And I'm like, "Well, no, that's why I picked up the book." She goes, "It's very dangerous. You can't explore this by yourself." Is that your school of thought also?
My school of thought is a couple of things. One is that people love to freak each other out.
So she was successful.
So there is so much fear when it comes to this term Kundalini, and it's because I talk about in the book is that a lot of spiritual knowledge is passed along like that, you know, like a bad game of telephone, you know, where one person experiences this fear and they may be holding themselves back, or they may just have heard about a Kundalini awakening being this horrible thing, and so they try to project and pass on that fear to other people. And this happens in a lot of the spiritual work that I do as well, especially if you go into things like shamanism or even magical or, you know, ritual spiritual work. People will be like, "Oh, you can't do that," and what they're describing to you is them holding themselves back. They're basically trying to get you to be in that state of fear with them. And so I will say that I do notice in the modern world is that we have such an idea of rugged individualism that people think that they don't need teachers, and that it is a huge, huge detriment to people, because there's so much information out there that it's easy for people to just kind of pick up all of these bits of noise and not know how to put them together. And so I meet people who have been on a spiritual path even for 30, 40 years, and they're just utterly and completely confused. However, most of the information that we have about Kundalini, you know, understandably comes from systems, especially, you know, kind of systems in India, where you absolutely needed a guru. You needed a guru to start the energy within you, to awaken it, to have them in front of you. It was very much a static system of this is what you need to do, this is the path, and how do you work with it. I think that that is a valid path. However, the amount of teachers out there that can do that for people are difficult, if not impossible, to find these days. And the other difficulty is that just because something was sort of set in stone, you know, a couple hundred years ago, that doesn't mean that it is, you know, still valid for us, or that we can't explore other options. And so I very much encourage people to go to healers, go to body workers, because there is a tendency for people to isolate and to try to teach themselves, which can end in disaster. But there are so many great ways to find communities, to find healing, to kind of move out of our isolated, rugged individualism these days. And some of them I talk about in the book. But I think it's very important to have somebody to check into, but I don't necessarily think a guru is necessary, is my short answer.
Okay. Well, how can you suss out a really good spiritual teacher? I mean, there's, unfortunately, you know, I've been in this line of work forever, and, you know, there's some people who are excellent, and there's some people who are just, frankly, full of shit. And, you know, how does one who doesn't know, they're just entering, you know, this arena, how can they, you know, discern who truly to work with? I mean, it's amazing the amount of calls I get on a daily basis about people being taken advantage of by others.
Well, there are a couple things to look for. One, to make sure that that person who is being a spiritual teacher or guru, that they have had teachers themselves. There are a lot of people who just, because of how we've separated out spiritual reality, they think that they can study a book and all of a sudden they're a spiritual teacher. But the big things to look for are humility and humanity. Mm-hmm. Somebody who is really conscious, the really conscious people that I've been around, the people that I consider my teachers, they are totally and immensely human. They are willing to say when they don't have the answers for everything. Most importantly, their focus is going to be turning you onto your own answers, not mm-hmm. saying that they don't have their own experiences, they don't have immense things to share, but the end result is a power dynamic of the student learning how to access and listen to their own power, their own wisdom. Somebody who claims that they have all of the answers to everything, quite frankly, is full of shit because they don't.
Exactly.
And the other thing to look for is that humanity, is that we're all human. We all make mistakes, no matter how conscious and realized, you know, somebody is. They aren't going to have all of the answers. And the difficulty is that some people are looking for teachers who will tell them what to think, tell them who to be, you know, tell them this is what happens and the afterlife, this is exactly what happens. This is exactly the answer to this. And that feels secure to them for some people for where they are, but it's all a total illusion. And so humility and humanity are the two things that I'd look for in a spiritual teacher, and evolution of thought, I would say. If they're saying the same thing that they were saying 15 years ago, that's to me is kind of a yellow light rather than a red one, but it's mm-hmm. kind of concern for me, because somebody on a spiritual path should evolve. They should be different than they were 5 years ago, maybe even 5 days ago.
Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid, folks, to, you know, ask questions. And if you get resistance when you're asking the questions, perhaps you should move to the next person and interview them. It's amazing how so many people, Mary, give up their own power.
Yeah.
And hopefully by working with their own kundalini, they can reclaim that power. Does it work that way?
It can. What I tend to notice about people in terms of teachers is that they are, I talk about loops a lot, which are kind of repeated behaviors and patterns that come from trauma. And so what happens to a lot of people is that they repeat issues with their mother or father, with their spiritual teacher, and their spiritual teacher may be wounded in the same way. And so they're just kind of replaying that trauma with one another, and that spiritual teacher may have become a spiritual teacher to take the power, to feel like they have all the answers, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And so that is where a lot of people are at, and hopefully people will kind of move beyond that.
Okay. Now I want to talk a minute about the energy of kundalini and the feminine or goddess energies. What can you share regarding the connection between that?
If we are talking about the polarity of the body, the kundalini energy, the energy that is associated with our pelvis, with our first, second chakra, that is a deeply feminine energy. That is the feminine aspect of our body. And then our head is associated with the masculine aspect. So kundalini energy is very much the rising of yin or feminine energies or even goddess energies that you can look at rising to meet and then merge with the masculine or solar aspects of the body. And so all of those things that are associated, you know, in binary reality with the feminine that we want to sort of move away from, like the earth, like the dark aspects of our nature, our spiritual power, our direct connection, those all very, our creation energy, our sexual energy, those very much are associated with kundalini and with the feminine or goddess energies of our body, no matter how we outwardly present or what sort of, you know, genitalia we have. And that energy is what rises within us to sort of meet that, you know, thinky head energy. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to switch gears for a moment. And you wrote this book, and I haven't read it yet. I bought it, but I haven't read it yet. And it's The Complete Cord Cutting Course. I was so intrigued because we're always courted to other people, whether we, you know, realize it or not, or even sometimes other things. So could you talk to us? And I know we hadn't planned this, so please, you know, bear with me. But could we talk about courting for a moment? Because it's so important. I don't think that people realize, or maybe even tying together the courting and the kundalini, if there is a link.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a link, but I love that. I love that book. It's my first book, so it's kind of like my first
child.
Okay,
your baby.
Yeah, it's kind of like my first baby. But it's such transformative work. And so what cords are our energetic connections to other people. It's how we exchange energy with other people. And so we cord to everyone. We cord to our car mechanic. We cord to the waiter we have. We also cord to our friends and family and everything like that. And they are how we exchange energy and emotions with people. And there are a lot of wonderful things about connecting to one another and recognizing that we have support and love and all that sort of stuff. But the difficulty is that when we cord to somebody, we might be cording to somebody who takes up all the space and energy through that cord. We may be being sucked dry through that cord, or contrarily, we might find that we are taking more energy in our relationships, or that our relationship with somebody is really out of balance or really toxic. And so working with energy cords, learning how to, the book goes into how I originally learned how to work with cords was just to cut them or to pretend that they were not there. And I will say that that can work like 5 or maybe 10% of the time, but then I was left with all these cords there that I didn't know how to work with. And so in the book, I very much talk about how to alter cords, how to alter the energetic and emotional dynamics of the cord. And so I think that just like we were talking about shadow work, considering things like boundaries, how we energetically relate to people, all of those things are incredibly important, not only for our own health. I think that anybody doing any work, like spiritual, energetic work, body work, or even work like teaching, customer service, waiting tables, anything where you're really, you know, being a doctor or a nurse, anything where you're interacting with a lot of people, especially a lot of people who may be really needy or draining or difficult, need to do cord work because they do have such a tremendous impact on us.
Okay. Well, folks, as I said, I haven't read it, but I was attracted to it and paid attention to my intuition and bought it. But consider that. And while you're out there getting the book Working with Kundalini, because I think that you would enjoy it. So, Mary, when we go to your website, maryschutin.com, what are we going to find?
So on my website, I have a blog. I'm going to try to write in it a little bit more often. Right now, it's about once a month, but I send out, and I have a long history of a bunch of blogs, which is a lot of free information for people to look through. I also, I'm no longer taking new clients, but I do teach courses, and so I have a meditation course that's coming up in which I do talk about things like self-inquiry, you know, shadow work. I very much teach that sort of stuff as part of the meditation course. Like my work, a lot of my work, my books, all of my books are very much focused on pragmatic, practical information, as well as the same time as like really teaching people tools and understanding and skills that they can use to come into their power, to really understand themselves and, you know, the universe in an in-depth level. So that's where a lot of my work is really focused. So, and you can also sign up for my mailing list on my homepage at maryschutin.com as well.
Okay, thank you for that. Now, the last, well, a couple of things. What is something that someone can do if they're having difficulty with their kundalini awakening? I mean, they're on board. For whatever reason, they can't either afford or hire a teacher yet. What can someone do if they're having difficulties to kind of straighten themselves on their path?
The first thing I would say is trauma care. And so if they are in a position to be able to go to a healer, and in the book, the last section very much is talking about varying modalities, like varying treatment options from herbalism to craniosacral therapy to energy work, and how effective they are for Kundalini awakenings. If they're not in a position for that, I wrote a book called The Body Deva, which very much is looking towards the body to heal trauma. The second thing I would say is volunteering. People who are going through difficult experiences, they tend to turn their energy inward. Sometimes they're to their own detriment. It can turn into isolation patterns. And so volunteering can help for people to expand their energy, as well as being of service is a way to drastically change our energy body, how we relate to people, how we're feeling, to recognize that we're not alone in this world. So trauma care as well as volunteering are the two things that I'd really suggest.
Okay. And before we go, what pearls of wisdom would you like to leave with our audience today?
I very much would say is that awakening, from my view, very much needs to be through and with the physical body, with the emotions, with, you know, with our lives. It should allow for transformation of who we are on multiple levels. And I know that there's a tendency for people to want to kind of separate out spirituality and the physical body and our emotional body, but they really are all one and the same. They're just kind of a continuum. And so really allowing ourselves to experience that whole continuum can allow for people to be in a much better place than people that attempt to discard their body or their lives or their emotions. So embodiment.
Okay. Very well said. Well, thank you very much. And Mary, thank you for being with us, and the audience, thank you for joining in with us today. The Divine in Me honors the Divine in You. I am truly honored for your time and attention. And folks, when you're ready to raise your vibration and shift your energy, you can give me a call for an intuitive consultation. Consultations 30 minutes or longer are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of working with your Kundalini. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.